May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be holy and pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and redeemer. Amen. We are approaching the end of things today. We are less than a month and a half away from the end of the year. We are actually less than 2 weeks away from the close of the liturgical year. Next week, we will celebrate the Feast of Christ the King, the last Sunday on our church calendar. And on the Sunday after Thanksgiving, we will start a new church year back at square one, the first Sunday of Advent, preparing for that fateful manger scene. But I am not primarily concerned with either of those dates today. When I say that we are approaching the end of things, I am actually talking about the content of our gospel passage today, a parable about the end of all things, a story about what we are to do with our brief and wondrous lives, and what we should expect should we find ourselves before God's throne one day. Maybe you didn't expect that from Jesus today, but this is the theme of this last section of the Gospel of Matthew, a section of Jesus' teaching that has to do with Judgment Day, the end of all things. It might be helpful for you to have some background on the Gospel of Matthew here. The Gospels, you see, each have their own distinctive take on Jesus. While they provide broad agreement on the highlights, they draw out distinctive elements of his ministry in the details. And what Matthew is known for, what Matthew excels at, is drawing a clear line between the depth and breadth of the Jewish tradition and Jesus' own life and teaching. In Matthew, Jesus is the consummate teacher and rabbi. And today's passage appears in the last of five long discourses that exemplify Jesus' gifts as a teacher. The fact that there are five such discourses in the Gospel of Matthew alludes to the shape of the Torah, the five books of Moses that form the backbone of the Jewish tradition. The implication of such an arrangement is that Jesus is the only one worthy to take up the great prophet Moses' mantle. And as his concluding word at the last long stretch of his teaching and preaching, right before he is led away to be crucified, Jesus has some things to share with us about what to expect when the Messiah returns in great power and glory. Jesus wants his disciples, Jesus wants us to live our lives with the end in sight. He warns us to keep awake. He beckons us to pay attention. Last week, we heard him allude to that with a parable that precedes today's story, the one about the 10 bridesmaids, the women who must keep awake and keep their lamps lit, lest the bridegroom comes in the middle of the night and finds them unprepared for the wedding banquet. This week, we hear the story of the three slaves and their talents, three people entrusted with great wealth by a shrewd and exacting master. We'll return to this one shortly. But the conclusion of this set of parables, the conclusion of Jesus' last discourse in the Gospel of Matthew, is likely the one we remember best, that of the shepherd on Judgment Day, separating the sheep from the goats. Those who treat the least of these well, the poor and the hungry, the orphan and the widow, those in prison and all those who live at the margins of society, those who treat those people with compassion and concern, sit at the shepherd's right hand. All those who ignored their plight are alone and separated from God on the left. What are we to make of these dire warnings? Now, there are a couple of ways to get this wrong. Some would focus solely on Judgment Day, The moment the bridegroom comes and finds the bridesmaids unprepared, the moment when Christ returns to separate the sheep from the goats, the moment the shrewd and exacting master deals his harsh punishment on the lowly slave who buried his talent. But this is not the point of the parables here. Parables paint large and startling figures. They demand a reaction by getting us to imagine a world beyond the confines of our narrow view of it. Jesus rarely said, "The kingdom of heaven is such and such a thing," but rather, "The kingdom of heaven is like." The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, for example, a pearl of great price, joyously discovered, a buried treasure once forgotten and now found, one sheep lost in the wilderness, and a shepherd who would leave the 99 behind to seek it out. What Jesus is trying to do with parables has less to do with judgment day than how we live out our call here and now. And the fact of the matter with each of these servants, with each of these slaves in this parable, is that they have been entrusted with great wealth. What are we to do with what we have been given? How are we to make the best of what we have with the time allotted to each of us? Now, there is another way to get this parable wrong, though, a tempting one for a preacher in the middle of stewardship season. We remove the focus from Judgment Day, and we plant ourselves firmly in the practicality of the here and now. We take this parable and make it a simple lesson in wise investment strategies. We make Jesus the Messiah of the capitalist market, a shrewd and stingy financier who has his eyes on his return on investment and little else. That is not the point of the parable either. In the context of Jesus' day and age, a single talent was worth several years' wages. If the master was indeed smart with his money, I doubt he would have left a wildly extravagant fortune behind for a few servants to do whatever they please with. Jesus, it turns out, is not a very good investor. He entrusted his church to a few fishermen and women of lowly social status. He made a known murderer responsible for his mission to the Gentiles. God has given us what we need and calls us to give back, but he will not be pleased with a half-hearted effort or a narrow-minded intervention. He will not settle for excuses that we are not good enough or smart enough or powerful enough. God calls each of us to dream bigger, to imagine what we might accomplish out of the abundance of God's gifts, rather than the scarcity of our stingy imaginations. The only question that remains is simply this. In the words of Mary Oliver, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? What will you do with the great gifts that God has given you? The great gift that you are for a world desperately in need of your presence and care. God doesn't just want a cut of the investment, my friends, a slice of your life, a safe nest egg for a rainy day. God rather wants all of you, all of you. And God is inviting you to take the long view, to look at the problems we face now with the burning question of the legacy you hope to leave behind. Friends, we have a lot of work to do, a lot of good work to do. We live in a world ravaged by a pandemic, riven with political division, assailed by economic uncertainty. And yet I see signs of hope each and every day. I see you distributing food for those who need it on the streets of Cary. I see you standing with Southeast Raleigh residents as development threatens to flood and gentrify yet another neighborhood. I see you making meals and delivering flowers to one another. checking in on the homebound just to say hello, meeting over Zoom to talk about God's love and presence in your life even now. Yes, my friends, your pledge is important. Making a concrete financial investment in the good work that we are doing will make a huge difference, especially in times like these. But God isn't just asking for that. God is inviting you to go all in. God is inviting you into a way of life of wholehearted, unrelenting, extravagant allegiance to the wonder-working Messiah and the people he brings in tow, the sick and the suffering, the wretched of the earth, the enemies you never imagined sharing a meal at your table. Friends, won't you join us? I have no idea what you should do with your talent, what you should do with your one wild and precious life, but I know that we will be better for it when you figure it out. The year may be coming to an end, but our work is just beginning. Take courage, my friends. We have been blessed richly with your presence. So let us step out in faith and get to work. Amen.